south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, we're on the air and on your screens again. Let's start with a little observation. You know, over the years, I've found that many, many gringos and expats with a plan B were former workaholics. So then, do they continue to be workaholics? Well, yeah. They're the ones that continue on with many hobbies or have a business start up within a couple of months of getting down here. Workaholics or ex-workaholic gringos? I run into them all the time. A percentage way beyond what you'd ever imagine. And there's a very high percentage of ex-military, too, especially ex-Marines. How about that? Yep, I've had a disproportionate number of them at my seminars, too. You gotta wonder, why would these guys who enlisted, forgotten country, huge patriots, you have to wonder, why would they leave the country a lot of them fought for? Did a few tours in Afghanistan or Iraq and such. Why would they, of all people, have a plan B and get the hell out of Dodge? Some people might go as far to say they were un-American, traitors to the cause. And you know, when that subject comes up, and it does sometimes, you'll usually get a cynical reply from those military guys. They say they loved being in the military, but as far as the cause, what cause? And you can believe this, none of the ex-military guys you'll meet down here in Latin America are the least bit woke. In fact, they're the farthest thing from it. In fact, wokeism up in the States, especially in the military, is one of the big factors that tipped the scales and brought these guys down. Oh, and a lot of older gringo expats are ex-FBI, CIA, and covert guys, too. In fact, one of the guys I've been hanging with lately is a 60-something ex-FBI guy who knows where quite a few bodies are buried, and he says he'll never go back to the States. And the stories he tells me, man, well, they're just sickening, and not for publication, believe me. He says he and all his FBI retired buddies know damn well that the U.S. is down the crapper. He says it's too late. The wokesters, the military contractors, and Big Pharma are in control, and there's no way out. Like we didn't know that already, right? So anyway, that's just something I wanted to bring up. For all you guys and gals out there, gonna-bes and wannabes, sitting on the fence, all of you who may be feeling guilty about leaving the mother country, you know, thinking somewhere deep down, you just might be an unpatriotic traitor. Though the somewhat more normal scenario is that you don't feel that way, but you're worried that other people might take it that way. If and when you pull the trigger on that plan B. That is, a lot of your stateside friends and family will give you crap about it. So in the end, there's still that conundrum. Why is it that there is a very high percentage of ex-military and ex-alphabet agency guys who've gotten the hell out of Dodge? And more of them piling in every day. You've got to wonder, what do they know that we don't know? Well, I'll tell you, if you ever become good friends with one or more of these guys, they'll leak some of those reasons, some of those secrets. Why? They've lost complete faith and trust in the country they worked for or even fought for. Oh, and if you're thinking some of these guys might be plants, you know, information collectors. I guess anything's possible, but I don't think at all with these retired alphabet agency guys. They've got their 20 or 30 years in, and they're getting nice, fat pensions and living like kings down here. They know a good thing when they see it. That said, we were talking about workaholics here in Latin America, right? It's a funny thing, you know, I was brought up amongst workaholics. There's a lot of them in my family. Engineering and tech schools are filled with them, too, especially those computer nerds. I know lots of guys that sit at their computers 18 hours a day and bang out code. They're pale as ghosts, live on Coke, Cheetos, and pizza, and barely come up for air. And though most of those guys make a ton of dough, they're very short on the social skills. But they don't seem to care. They seem pretty content. In fact, they're kind of antsy when they're not banging away at the keyboard. So then, what's the definition of a workaholic? Well, there's kind of two things that are dead giveaway. The first being that people actually tell you you're a workaholic. Of course, you'll usually deny it, but that's a big giveaway. The second big clue, workaholics have an existential dread when inactive. They never feel quite comfortable sitting around doing absolutely nothing. People say it's difficult to go on vacation with these guys, for example, to an all-inclusive resort, because soon enough, when you're down at the beach or the pool, sipping Mai Tais in lawn chairs, your workaholic buddy will make excuses, sneak off to the room, and start banging away on his laptop again. Man, I can't tell you how many times I've been with my engineering buddies and their wives on some kind of vacation. And their wives and girlfriends tell them to just relax and put that stuff away. And they do it because almost all nerds, geeks, and engineers dutifully obey their wives and girlfriends. Why? Because they feel extremely lucky they even have a girl. Hey, if you're a nerd, geek, engineer, intellectual, or analytical type, you generally suffered through junior high school, and college with little or no female companionship or attention apart from their moms. Even handsome nerds are generally lacking in the social graces, and young, attractive women like to go out and party and dance with a guy that's got a bit of style and personality, a guy that can actually talk about non-technical things. Now, if you're wondering if I had that problem, no, because I was in a rock band. That kind of elevates anyone a point or two in the dating and mating scene. But I have to tell you, whilst in college and out of college, practically all my friends were nerds. And nearly all of them had trouble getting dates. Or I should say hot, good-looking dates. Now, of course, when these guys get out of college and their finances zoom astronomically, especially compared to those likable but sort of thick liberal arts frat party boys, suddenly there comes a time when those nerds, geeks, IT types, and engineers are in great demand with the ladies. But unfortunately, their low self-worth had been established in the mating dating game. The baseline was set way back when, which is why almost all my IT and nerdy and engineering buddies jump to attention when their wives and girlfriends make a demand. Talk about the ladies wearing the pants in the family. That's how many engineering families turn out. And you thought only dogs cowered when they heard the master's voice. Which brings us to a social phenomenon I like to call the gringo savior complex. Now, note that, ladies, you gringos out there, this does not apply to you. It only applies to us single gringo expats because we're weak in more ways than one. That also explains why so many gringo expat men end up having disastrous relationships with Latina women. First, let's start with the known premise that beautiful women, whether they're gringas or Latinas, can pretty much have their choice of any man they want. In fact, if you think about it, the modern mating and dating game, at least back to the 1950s anyway, even way before then, was 100% controlled by women. You know the drill. Every guy would like to have a good-looking woman. And good-looking women can be very picky. And the ones that aren't so smart, end up getting knocked up at 16 or 18 and their life's really over. They've got that baggage forever. Another universal in the mating and dating game is that good-looking women get catered to. Everybody loves beauty. The world loves beauty. It opens lots of doors. In fact, some people, girls and guys, are so damn beautiful and sexy, they don't need a personality or a brain at all. And it's a fact that most guys, especially average guys and guys that don't look like George Clooney or Brad Pitt, they fall all over themselves when they're in the presence of a really beautiful woman. I've seen it myself, especially with the nerd crowd in the engineering world. Guys just clam up, even spit bubble, when standing or sitting in close proximity to a beautiful girl or a gaggle of them. So then, what's that got to do with the so-called gringo savior complex? Well, in a nutshell, I've been to many social gatherings where there's gringos present with their Latina girlfriends or wives, where it becomes sort of glaringly obvious that they are a complete mismatch. And we're not just talking about age difference here. As I've mentioned many times before on this show, in Latin America, when it comes to mating, dating, and marriage, age differences, sometimes huge age differences, are the norm. In fact, I've had a couple of Latina girlfriends whose parents had a 20 or 25 year age gap. That means for the kids, it's no big deal either. But still, it does not sit very well with American tourists, most especially American ladies. And so when you run into a fresh green gringa or gringo here in Latin America that's just seen a couple with a huge age gap, they might ask a local or a gringo who's been down a while, like me. They might ask, don't the parents get upset when there's a huge age gap? They'd say, my parents up in the States sure wouldn't take it very well. What happens when the young girl brings the gringo home for Sunday dinner and he's 20 or 30 years older than her? Isn't she embarrassed? Isn't it, to say the least, socially awkward? To which I say, hey, after you've got some boots on the ground and been down here a couple of years, that question will no longer enter your mind. Now, occasionally, just occasionally, you'll see a decrepit old gringo who could hardly walk. He's got a cane. A guy who's for sure in his late 60s or 70s, holding hands with a girl that looks like she's around 22. A girl of a different complexion, color, and race altogether. So you know it's not his daughter. Or his granddaughter. Though the age spread could work for both. Now, even I, when I see something like that, and I see it quite often, I have to cringe a bit. But it is part of what I call the gringo savior complex. So how do you think something like that happens? How do they hook up? Is there a classified section for old decrepit gringos looking for young nubile Latinas? I doubt it. Obviously, you'd think a girl like that would have zero attraction for an old skeletal geezer. The million-dollar question is, how does it happen? Does he just walk up and ask her for a date? The truth is, a lot of these young girls' mothers are the matchmakers, believe it or not. Sometimes it's the daughter of his cleaning lady. More on that later. So where do I see these couples? Well, at Latin American airports and quite a few Latin cities off the gringo tourist trail. You don't see that on the tourist trail much at all, and I'll tell you why. It does tend to draw a lot of stares and glares from the average American family, especially the average American lady. For them, it's beyond repulsive, beyond robbing the cradle. Now, for the average American lady, when she sees a 10-year gap, well, that's tolerable. But a 20 or 30-year gap? They're thinking the guy needs an orange jumpsuit. He needs to be locked up, really. After all, the only way you could ever get away with something like that, and you're still going to be lots of talk and backstabbing, is in Hollywood, where somehow, if you have enough dough, fame, or position, age gaps get sort of tempered. Even way back when, a guy like Cary Grant, a superstar, was 61 when he married Diane Cannon. She was 27. So he had 34 years on her. That was in the mid-60s, more than 50 years ago, and almost no one balked. There was a little talk, but not much. After all, he was a superstar. Cary Grant. Now, think of the average guy in Milwaukee or Cleveland trying to pull that off. If he did, they'd call him a pervert or worse. They'd cancel him, boot him from his Amazon warehouse job, send nasty emails, graffiti up his house, and run him out of the neighborhood. For sure, both families would boycott the wedding. So anyway, you do see that here in Latin America. It's not common at all on the gringo tourist trail, but off the trail, just go to any big commercial district, Walmart or Costco, any place there's lots of pedestrian traffic, and you'll see couples with huge age gaps, 20, 30, 40 years. Now, of course, when you're off the tourist trail, you won't see many gringos at all, mostly Latino couples. But if you hang around long enough, especially at some of the favorite Latino vacation spots, there are lots and lots of sun and fun tourist spots strictly for Latinos. Gringos don't even know about them. Sure, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, there's always the occasional gringo. Hell, I'm the occasional gringo. But again, one of the places you see the largest age gaps are at Latin American airports. Like, for example, Bogota, Colombia. A while back, I got laid over in that airport for about 5 hours. I must have seen 10 or so 70-ish wrinkly gringos arm-in-arm with 20-something Latinas. And guess what? No one rubbernecked or gave them a second look. None of the local Latinas, or Latinos anyway. But man, I'll never forget the layover I had just recently at the Costa Rican airport, which is, as you might guess, just loaded with gringos. I had a layover. I was sitting on a row of chairs at a busy gate. Sitting next to me, a 50-something American gringo lady with her husband and teenage daughter. When a 70-something gringo walked by with a 20-something Latina on his arm, and the lady sitting next to me said to her husband, "Look, George, that's disgusting." And he, the trained seal that he was, nodded and agreed, a bit too strongly, it seemed to me. Reminding me of that famous line, "Thou doth protest too much." Which brings us back to the million-dollar question. How do old gringo geezers, even stooped-over decrepit gringo geezers, hook up with young Latinas who could be their granddaughters? Well, I think that's best explained with a boots-on-the-ground story. You see, a couple of months ago, I was with my brother, the stem cell poster child, at my favorite stem cell clinic in the Dominican Republic. Now, the capital of the Dominican Republic, Santo Domingo, is where the main stem cell clinic is located. And though it's got a tremendous historic district where Columbus and his family members built houses, churches, cathedrals, and government buildings and all that. And though it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, it's not really on the gringo tourist trail at all. Sure, it's a great place to walk around, great people watching, but 95 to 98% of all those people are Dominicans. Aside from Dominicans, just a few backpackers and dyed-in-the-wool history buffs. The gringo tourist trail does exist, but it's 4 hours away, in the white sand beaches of Punta Cana. That's where the gringos go, the far end of the island. Only 1 in 1,000 ever makes it to Santo Domingo. So anyway, one day I was sitting in the lobby, the lounge of the stem cell clinic, waiting for my brother, and a 50-something European guy sat down next to me. Obviously, from his accent, he was from Italy. And right next to him sat his 20-something Latina wife. Look, I was stuck there for over an hour, so we conversed a bit in English. He was the talkative sort and started telling me his life story in English. And his young wife only spoke Spanish and a bit of Italian. He knew she wouldn't understand, so he spoke freely. So anyway, he told me, the first time he came down to Santo Domingo was around 10 years ago to visit one of his friends, another Italian guy who opened up an Italian restaurant in the historic district. He said he liked it so much that every 6 months he'd come down for a couple of weeks to visit his friend. By the way, back in Genoa, Italy, this guy owned a couple of dry cleaning places, he said. Anyway, after about 2 years, he decided he liked it so much in the DR in Santo Domingo. He decided to live in both countries, Italy and the DR. 6 months in one place, 6 months in the other. So he rented a place in a middle-class area of Santo Domingo and started making his plans to open up a dry cleaning place in the DR too. So he did what every gringo and European guy or gal does when they rent an apartment. They hire a cleaning lady. Now, it turns out this 40-something-year-old cleaning lady had an abusive, drunken husband who appeared and disappeared at will. Surprise, surprise, what else is new? And she had two beautiful young teenage daughters. After a while, you get to know your cleaning lady pretty well. She becomes part of the family. So, eventually, she invited him to one of her daughters' quinceañeros parties. You know, when a girl turns 15 down here, they have a big shindig. Even poor folks pull out the stops for their daughters' quinceañeros. So anyway, he said he arrived at their little place and was struck at how beautiful her daughters were. They were 15 and 17. So anyway, the Italian guy's plan was to get to know the family really well and eventually marry one of the daughters. I'm not kidding. It sounds like a twisted kind of fairy tale, all right, but I had to believe him. That wasn't the first time I heard a tale like that. So anyway, he remained a good friend of the family, hands off, of course, he said, till the 17-year-old hit 19. And that was 7 years ago, he said. And now he's one of those first world guys American ladies love to hate. So anyway, I guess he's around 60, she's 27, they have a kid now. Hold on, all you ladies listening to this, remember, before you poo-poo it and wrinkle your noses in disgust, remember, that's the same age gap as Cary Grant and Diane Cannon. Now, don't think that Italian guy got through that ordeal unscathed. He didn't. He said when they had the kid, he took her back to Italy to meet his folks, but it didn't go down very well. He said a 33-year age gap doesn't go down well in Italy either. Unless, he said, and get this, you happen to be an Italian movie star, a Formula One race car driver, or one of the Gucci brothers. Anyway, he said when he visited Genoa, Italy with his wife and kid, the first critical words he heard were from his mom. She said, he explained with her Italian hands flailing, Giovanni, my Giovanni, you're crazy. You're 15 years older than your mother-in-law. And Giovanni had no comeback. And though he got high fives from his two brothers, he got nothing but dirty looks from his sisters. So he said after that, they don't go back to Italy anymore. You know, if you can't take the heat, stay out of the kitchen. Meanwhile, back in the DR, he says he gets no strange looks or double takes from anyone, except occasionally at, you guessed it, the airport. In fact, he said, and you gotta love this, a certain middle-aged gringa lady standing in line at the baggage check-in made a disparaging comment to her husband about them. The Italian guy just couldn't make out what she said, but it was obviously nasty. Instead of saying something or even ignoring her, he purposely gave his wife a deep, lunging kiss and gave that gringa a big-ass smile. Now, earlier I mentioned a thing I call the gringo savior complex. That applies to European men, too. It's about the fact that such a high percentage of gringos, single gringo guys who come down to Latin America, especially when they don't speak Spanish and are still wearing rose-colored glasses, well, they have a problem. I can't tell you how many times I've run into gringos with a beautiful Latina on their arm, and you just know after a short conversation that she's got some heavy baggage, even fatal flaws that he doesn't know about yet. There's no real love there, it's just an arrangement. She's really only with the guy because he can pull her and her family out of poverty. And though it might work for a while, it doesn't last. There are chinks in that armor from day one. One place I saw that happen over and over again is Costa Rica. You know, there's a great deal of sex tourism in Costa Rica, especially in San Jose. Most of the dozen or so hotels around the Central Park are loaded with lovelorn middle-aged gringos. They've even got single gringo charter flights coming from the States. The guys flying in strictly to make a love match. Those hookups might work for a little while, but I've never seen them last. It's a system that's been going on for more or less 30 or 40 years now. You walk into any restaurant, bar, or disco in the Central Park area there. There are always tons of young, fresh-looking Latinas hanging around looking to meet an older, lovelorn gringo. Of course, in the strip clubs too, which are all over San Jose. Now, most of the girls hanging around down there are basically part-time hookers. And lovelorn, greenhorn gringos who don't speak Spanish sort of know that. And this is where the gringo savior complex comes in. They figure if they could catch a beautiful young Latina who's just started hooking, maybe she's only been in for a week or two, they figure they can save her. They figure a young girl who's had some real bad breaks in life and is just starting in the hooking business is a soul that can be saved. So then a lovelorn gringo asks such a girl to dinner, quizzes her about her life and her family, and asks a few all-important questions. Namely, what drove her into that sordid business and how long she been doing it? And a smart girl who's looking out for herself will always say, I'm new. I just started a week ago. Of course, it's most likely a big lie. But the fresher and more innocent the act, the more likely that gringo will bite. Now, the truth is every last one of these girls wants you to get her a visa and take her back to the States, which is the kiss of death, but I'm sure you've figured that out already. Though the vast majority, perhaps 98% of all the gringos that come down on those chartered flights looking for love, they will go back. They've got day jobs back in the States. They're just coming down for a jaunt, either to check out for themselves what it's really like. They've heard about the girls, but can't quite believe it's true. They have to see it for themselves, with the thought in the back of their minds that they can find that perfect girl, bring her back, and get married. Let's face it, it's a racket. Because guys, if you're stupid enough to bring a Latino back to the States, especially one that doesn't speak English, even if you don't have a 20 or 30 year age gap, which makes acceptability up in the States even harder, think of this. When you go back to work, your lady's going to be sitting at home all day. She'll be a stranger in a strange land. She won't know anyone, and will only have her Netflix and her smartphone to keep her company. And eventually, as she explores the neighborhood, gets out of the house and such, who do you think she's going to hook up with? People who speak Spanish. You know, the uneducated, low-hanging fruit. On top of that, when she does start going out, like all Latinas, she'll dress extra sexy, even to go to the supermarket. And every guy and his brother is going to try to hit on her, including guys who are a lot more suave, handsome, and younger than you. Man, I'll tell you, I've seen it 100 times. The worst mistake you could ever make is to bring your Latina bride back to the States. Of all the cases I've known, I've never seen it work beyond a couple of years. Not once. However, you're better odds by far, but still no guarantee. Make it clear to any lady you're interested in. You tell her that you'll be living a first world life in Latin America, a life that's better than anybody she probably knows. But you're not taking her back to the States. And if she's happy with that, there's a plus or two in her column. And if she balks and says she wants to see my jammy Nueva York in Disneyland, you're in for trouble. Bottom line, most of us single gringos come down here with that savior complex embedded in our brain somewhere. And it seems the only way to get over it or control it is to not let yourself get deeply involved in romance, mating, and dating till you've been down a while. Don't make any promises. In other words, don't get serious about any kind of relationship for at least 6 months to a year. Sure, you're going to meet people right off the bat. Some will be extraordinarily sexy and beautiful too. But remember, everyone's got baggage, and sometimes the most beautiful, sexy girls have the most baggage. Hey, not that we, us gringos and expats, don't have a ton of baggage too, but it's a different kind of baggage. My advice, if you're coming down as a single person, if you don't want to end up with a beautiful, sexy, insincere gold digger, take it slow. But chances are you won't. Like expat Eddie always says, men are simple and women know how to play us. That means if you're going to play the game, you better start with a big pile of chips. Expect to lose more than you bargained on, too. And always at least keep one in your shoe. However, my best advice, in the mating, dating, love, and romance realm, skip the ladies in the bars, the discos, the nightclubs, the strip clubs, the massage parlors, and be very leery of the girls you hook up with on those Latina Cupid dating sites. Remember, if a girl you haven't even met yet is sending you all kinds of sexy bikini shots, then telling you she's short $100 for grandma's medicine, all the while telling you she loves you after just a couple of days having not even met you before. Talk about red flags. But us gringos have that savior complex and we fall for that stuff. All right, moving on. How about this article coming from the Los Angeles Times Mexico Bureau? It's long, so I'll paraphrase it. The title, Mexico's New Racial Reckoning, Colorism and White Privilege in Mexico. It says, certain upscale restaurants in Mexico have a policy of segregation in which best tables are reserved for customers with the lightest skin. It says Mexican college kids are becoming outraged. Using Twitter and TikTok, they've called out companies and celebrities for discrimination and have popularized a new term, white-exican, a mixture of the words white and Mexican, to refer to the nation's wealthy, light-skinned elite. It says the Spanish conquest of the New World 5 centuries ago established a caste system in Mexico in which social standing was largely determined by a person's racial mix. At the top of the ladder were people of European descent, Spaniards, followed by those of mixed colonial and indigenous heritage, and at the bottom were indigenous people, followed by black slaves. It says, in recent years, Mexican academics developed a new research method. Before asking about a person's life, they categorized the respondent's skin tone on an 11-point color scale that ranges from darkest to lightest. The results have been striking. Turns out, the Mexican people with the whitest skin had completed at least 11 years of schooling on average, compared with 5 years on average for those with the darkest skin. They also found that wealth also completely correlated to skin color, with dark-skinned people earning 52% less than their whiter compatriots. No surprise, it says, in a country where the word Indian or Indio is routinely used to describe someone who is lazy or stupid. The report points out how Mexican parents and grandparents cajole their kids into marrying lighter-skinned Mexicans to improve the race. All right, me, Johnny here. You know, I've got some Latino friends, male friends, who told me they found a light-skinned Latina wife just for that reason. Then it says in Mexican films and television, darker-skinned actors are relegated to roles as housekeepers and criminals. In fact, up to the year 2013, a casting call for an ad for Mexico's national airline, Aeromexico, had advertisements saying dark-skinned people need not apply. Then it says, the most dramatic of the academic findings and studies show that the issue in Mexico is bigger than just a marginalization of historic communities. They're now calling it a pigmentocracy, in the words of academic Edward Tellis, in which skin color in Mexico is the most important determinant of a person's economic and educational level. The article says, dark-skinned Mexicans, when growing up and watching television, admit that they never saw icons or heroes with faces like theirs, only as maids and servants. One Afro-Latino Mexican lady says that she was a honey-colored, light-skinned kid. She stood out from the rest of her family, who often referred to her as white. That's how things were in her pueblo. However, when she moved to upscale parts in Mexico City, she's now seen as a dark-skinned person, which has left her quite confused. And one dark-skinned Latina woman said, I had a baby who was super white. I used to worry people might think I'd stolen her from someone. Then the article says many, many Mexicans describe their childhoods in which their mothers sought to change their complexion with skin lightening products. Shades of Michael Jackson, huh? It says dark-skinned Mexicans have routinely been subjected to ridicule by comedians and Mexican soap operas. All right, me, Johnny here. Well, at least all the racism and prejudice in Latin America is starting to come out in the open. Wait a minute, hold the phone. You mean everything bad in the world is not caused by evil first world American white men? That doesn't sound right.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.